This is the Auntie M Brain Tumors Talk Show. It's a show full of informative chat and inspirational messages. The Auntie M Brain Tumors Talk Show on podcast. Hello, welcome to Auntie M Brain Tumors Talk Show. I'm your host, Claire, and we've got an important mission this month. It is Brain Tumor Awareness Month, and we're shedding light on a crucial issue. Brain tumors claim more lives among children and adults under 40 than any other cancer. Shockingly, only 1% of the national spend on cancer research is allocated to this silent threat.
Hello.
Hello. How are you?
I'm good.
Thanks so much for reaching out.
That's fine.
Thank you very much.
I'm really glad that you're going to be a part of Brain Tumor Awareness Month, and I can't actually believe that we're nearly at the end of it, and
it's just flown in, hasn't it?
Yeah, no, it has. And yeah, so I'm looking forward to hearing about your story and as to why, where you've been affected by a brain tumor, but also about Brain Tumor Ireland.
Yeah, so it's the only charity that's actually available in Ireland for anybody that has been affected by a brain tumor or their family has been affected. So it doesn't receive any funding from the government. It's quite a small charity, but they do a lot of work in the community trying to raise awareness and obviously being a support to people that have been affected and their families.
Take us back to when you were starting to have symptoms before you got diagnosed, which I'm aware was in 2020. And with a meningioma.
So if I set a bit of context here. So in 2020, I was just coming back off maternity leave. So I'd had my daughter, who's now just turned 5. I came back from maternity leave to work in January 2020. And by March 2020, the country here in Ireland was in lockdown. Yeah. So COVID had begun. We were sent home thinking that we're going to be home for 2 weeks, but that obviously didn't happen. Like many countries, we were in lockdown and we were quite strict lockdown. And I was at home trying to juggle being a parent, working from home, and both myself and my husband trying to juggle all of that. I was actually studying at nighttime at the same time as well. So I was doing my master's in HR management because I work in HR. So there was a lot going on, shall we say. And I had been having headaches. Now, when I say headaches, it was nothing out of the ordinary. I wouldn't describe them as anything other than a headache that was quite persistent. I'd take a headache tablet and it would go away. But I just felt like I had pressure around my head quite a lot of the time. And initially, I put it down to, obviously, we had a very young child. We were quite stressed in trying to balance everything that was going on. But for some reason, I just said to myself, I'm going to go to the doctor. It was in my mind. I said, look, I was a little bit worried about it, but putting it to the back of my mind. But I said, look, I'll go to the doctor. I'll go see my GP. And thankfully, my GP decided to send me for an MRI. Didn't make a big deal about it, just said, look, let's get an MRI, let's rule anything out. And that was in June of 2020. And within a day, I had a phone call from having my MRI to being told, we have found something, has shown up.
Yeah.
It's just devastating to get a phone call to say, obviously we were in COVID. So in Ireland at the time, I'm not sure how strict it was where you are, but in Ireland there was no going into hospital. You had to have an appointment. You had to have an appointment to see your GP. I was getting a phone call from them because they didn't want me to come back in again. So it was just devastating to know there's something there. And I remember it so clearly. My GP actually rang and said, they found something. It's called a meningioma, or typically it's a meningioma. She never used the words brain tumor. And I think she did that for a reason, because I think once you hear those words, you absolutely panic and straight away your mind goes to it's cancer, et cetera, et cetera. You just go into this turmoil of what does this mean? So she said all of this to me on the phone. She said, we're going to refer you. So the biggest hospital in Ireland is a hospital called Beaumont, and it specializes in everything to do with brain injury, everything to do with tumors, cancer diagnoses, all that type of stuff. So that is like the biggest hospital that looks after anybody that's been affected by this. So very quickly I was whisked in, and I was seen by a consultant, my now consultant, who is the top neurosurgeon in Europe. It was just fluke. I was very lucky, and I went to see him, and it was straight away. I was in quite quickly, and I went to see him, and he reviewed my scan, and we had a conversation. And then I found out this is a brain tumor. He went through more detail with me around what it typically looked like. So I had my scan, and they had noticed a tumor, what they deemed to be at the time a meningioma. That's what it presented itself as. And we had a really in-depth discussion about, okay, what are we going to do? So at this stage, like, I didn't have any other symptoms other than presenting with headaches. I had nothing else. So I was still working. I was looking after my family. I was studying at nighttime. I was singing in a band, and I was doing gigs around the country at the same time. So life was normal up until the 2nd of June when I got this phone call, which was crazy. So when I went in to see him, I was like, I'm the type of person that I need to know everything. I need to know, what does this mean? What are we doing next? How do we treat it? Et cetera, et cetera. I just wanted to know everything I could possibly know about it. So his recommendation at the time was, look, generally speaking, when we see these types of tumors, meningiomas, they start in what's called the meninges in your brain. Typically speaking, they can be there for years and years, and they, a lot of the time, they're only discovered by chance. A lot of the time, they are a grade one meningioma, so they might have been growing for years. They may never grow, and you may never need to do anything with them. But in my case, I was so young at the time, he said to me, look, typically speaking, we will do something called watch and wait. So we will scan you again. And we will have a look and see how it's behaving. What is it doing? So that was the option for me in June. And he wanted to see me again in August time. So he had recommended that we'll do another scan in August and we will see what it's doing. So that was me going off and trying to put a brave face on everything. I didn't tell anybody. The only people that knew were my close family and obviously my husband. To be honest with you, I just didn't even know what to say to people. I was like, how do you tell people that on the outside they're looking at me and I look perfect? I'm working, I'm not in hospital, I'm not sick. I didn't feel sick. I just could not believe. I think I was in shock for the first couple of months thinking that there's this thing actually growing in my head. How is this possible? That in itself can have a really negative impact on your mental health. And I found it was a real struggle in the first couple of months to deal with that and put a brave face on and just do everything that I was doing previous to that phone call. Hop, skip and jump, we go to August. I go back in, I've had another scan. This time I've had a contrast scan. So they've injected a dye so they can see it a bit better. And when I went in to see my consultant, he was a little bit concerned. So it looked like from the scan that it had grown slightly, like by a millimeter or two. And he wasn't very happy about that. So again, didn't really have very many answers. It was, I want to see you again. We're going to do another scan. Let's do another scan around November time. So I was sent away, not really knowing, but praying, hoping and praying that it's maybe it's an anomaly on the scan and maybe it's going to be fine and I won't need to do anything. So I went away. I spent the next couple of months trying to, again, not sit up at 4 a.m. and read through journals about tumors and meningiomas. And look, I'm going to be really honest, I didn't do that very successfully. I spent a lot of my time immersing myself in all the information I could possibly find about brain tumors. And it was at that stage that I started reaching out to Brain Tumor Ireland, which is the charity in Ireland, and just trying to find information, because it's when you're thrown into this world that you've known nothing about and you just don't even know where to start. And I just felt like I really needed to speak to people. I needed to know there was other people out there that had a similar diagnosis, and I wanted to know what that meant for them, and did they have to have surgery, and what happened. So in that kind of holding time, if you like, I was spending a lot of time trying to find out what was going on, whilst also trying to keep myself positive and say, look, this could be fine. This couldn't be any, this might be like nothing and I don't have to do anything with it. But unfortunately, we get to November and I have another scan And I go in to see my consultant. And from the second I walked in the room, from his face and the screen that I could see where my scan was, you could see that the tumor had doubled in size. So within those couple of months, it had gone to twice its size. So at this stage, it had gone from the size of a grape initially to more or less the size of a strawberry. So I remember so clearly walking into his office and him saying, okay, this has to come out. This needs to come out. We need to do surgery. So that was me in November 2020 being faced with this agonizing decision that I have to make, where I have a young child at home and I'm going in to have this major surgery. And the risks are the length of your arms. So they go through all the risks with you. I'm told that obviously the worst risk is death, because that is the same with any major surgery. But I'm told about these risks about seizures, about there might be an infection, you might get swelling on the brain, stroke, etc. There's so many of them. And it's, I didn't have a choice. Like this thing was growing, and the only way it was going was in. And that meant that another thing that I was told, where my tumor was situated within my brain is on the left hand side. And it was in an area of my brain where my speech could have been affected. So that was another risk that I was faced with, where I was told, when you have the surgery, you may need to have speech therapy when you come out. We don't know. Obviously, you go in with the hope that you're not going to have any of that aftercare. So me being the job that I'm in, I work in HR, I talk every day, I'm a singer, how is this going to affect my life? So it was agony. It was absolute. It was horrific to have to go through that, but I didn't have a choice. I went in on the 23rd of November, 2020. Obviously, again, we're in the middle of COVID. My husband had to drop me at the door of the hospital, and I had to walk in on my own because nobody could come in. We weren't allowed any visitors. So this was me going in to have the surgery. And that's what happened. Had the surgery. Now, what I will say is, thankfully, I had a really good outcome. My surgeon managed to remove my entire tumor. So every part of the tumor was removed and it was sent to pathology, because obviously at this stage, for anybody that doesn't know, you don't know the grade until they take it out. And it's sent to pathology to be tested. And obviously the hope and the pray is that, please God, this is a grade one, which is like the best type of tumor that you could have. It's non-cancerous. It has a really low regrowth rate, and we're hoping that's what it's going to be. When I went back in 10 days after your surgery, you're brought back in and they give you the results of the pathology. And mine was, unfortunately, what's called a grade two. My tumor, grade two, it's not the best, but it's not the worst. Grade two is typically non-cancerous. They are sometimes described as atypical. The characteristics of that grade two is non-cancerous, but has a higher recurrence rate. And what that means for me is in the next 10 years, it may regrow again. And that's what I am now living with. I am in the system, per se. I still see my consultant every 6 to 8 months. I have a scan. And that is, the purpose of that is to make sure that there is no regrowth in the site of where the first tumor grew.
How often are you having your scans now?
So right now, my last scan, so I've been seeing every 6 months since having the surgery. So say twice a year, if you like. My next scan has been pushed out slightly. So I don't get to see my consultant now for 8 months. So I'd be due to see him around August, September time. From a medical standpoint, the tumor was removed. Amazing. After the surgery, I found the recovery and everything that happened afterwards really tough. And I don't think I was prepared for the recovery. So what happened to me was, I was on the ward. I'd gotten a great news to say the tumor is completely removed. They were talking about me going home within 2-3 days. But on day two, I started having seizures. So that subsequently meant that I, for a month after my surgery, I had what's called focal aware seizures every 2 to 3 days, sometimes 2-3 times a day, because they had gone in. Like anybody that has brain surgery, they've gone in, they've disrupted the neurological pathways, and it takes time for them to rebuild. So my recovery was really tough. I found it really hard to get the medication right to stop me having seizures. It was really scary, the very first one, because the way it presented itself was I lost the power of my speech for a couple of minutes. I couldn't actually speak. So to be told that there's a risk of speech therapy or speech difficulties, and then to get a seizure and not be able to speak, I was all over the place. I just didn't know what was going on. I didn't know what to expect. And it's a very typical risk with brain surgery. But for me, I was petrified because I thought, is this me now for life? Is this going to be what happens all the time? And thankfully, after about a month, and I was taking medication and we had to test out the medication. But thankfully, it started to work and I've been seizure free since the 21st of December 2020 was my last seizure. Oh, I haven't had any since, and I'm back driving and it's amazing. But it was really scary to think that the tumour was out, but now I'm still having seizures. What does this mean? So I really appreciate, like, I'm on anti-seizure medication for life. So be it, because if that means that I'm able to live a normal life and continue on and do all the things that I'm back doing now, then I'll take that any day.
What's the tablets that you're taking?
I take Keppra.
Does it make you a bit fatigued?
Do you know what I find? At the moment, I feel like it's working really well, but in the beginning, so I found for the first 2 years, I'd say it took me about 2 years in total to get completely over the surgery, the trauma, everything. Or I don't even know. I'm sure the trauma, you could argue, it stays with you forever, because I will always be hyper sensitive and aware with anything to do with my body now as a result of what's happened. I'm not sure if I could put the fatigue and the tiredness down to the Keppra. It probably has a part to play, but I found that for initially the first year in particular after having the surgery, like, I was going out and maybe going for a walk or making dinner, and I'd have to go to bed like 2, 3, 4 times a day, lie down and actually physically sleep. It was like as if my brain was taking so long to recover. That was my life for that amount of time. I was out of work for 6 months. I went back to work after 6 months and I ramped back on. So basically didn't go back full or even part-time. I was really fortunate that I was able to go back in and do a few hours every other day in the beginning, because I just wasn't able. I couldn't get my thoughts together. I couldn't even look at a computer screen for a prolonged period of time. I found it really hard. I found the recovery really tough.
Were your company really supportive?
Yes, I have to say I was really lucky in that my direct managers, my directors and the company itself were really sympathetic and allowed me that time, which was amazing. And I'm sure it's not the same for everybody. So I feel really fortunate that I had that.
How long did it take till you were doing your singing? Like, where you, because obviously that's going to be an evening thing. You've got to be a bit more awake and it's noisy. It would be really noisy wherever you are. How did you cope with that?
Yeah, so what I did was, so previous to all of this happening and me getting the diagnosis and going in for surgery, I was gigging, like doing cover bands and doing weddings and corporate events and stuff like that. Now, they did all slow down because of COVID, because of restrictions and people not able to go ahead with their weddings, which happened across the country. So that did slow down a bit for me. But when all of this happened, I'd always been toying with doing my own original music. I don't think I was ever brave enough to actually go ahead and do it. I didn't think I had songs that were good enough, and I didn't really know where to start with it. So because I had all this time on my hands, because I was recovering, I started to reach out to producers that had been recommended to me in Ireland, people that had worked with people before. And I found a really amazing producer in a studio called Jealous Town Studios, which is in Ireland. And I reached out to him around 2021. I was about maybe a year and a bit into my recovery. And I just put it out there, said, look, I have songs here. I'd love to come into you. Can we start to do them? So I wasn't gigging as in out in a big area where I was in a big band.
Yeah.
I started doing it in the studio. So there was only me and the producer. And initially I couldn't even last 3 hours. 3 hours was the max that I could do. Mm. And I just built it up from there. I went and he went at my pace as well, which was amazing. I went in, we started toying with like different instruments, different sounds, different lyrics, and it started from there. And I released my first independent original song in 2022.
Wow.
And it's taken off from there. Music is an amazing tool and actually an amazing therapy.
Yeah.
For anybody that has had a brain injury or a brain surgery. So I felt that it really helps me.
Mm. Yeah, no, it does. I've sung my whole life. I've always been a singer. And when I had my surgery,
amazing.
But when I had my surgery, I can't think up the songs quick enough now. So even though if I'm singing along to the words on the radio or something, I can sing because I'm literally like a millisecond behind them saying it. But if I stand there and I have to sing on my own, I can't remember the words. Like I literally have no idea what, nothing comes out my mouth. So it like made such a bit of a stop for everything I was ever going to do for singing. Yeah,
yeah,
no, it was. But then karaoke came along and I was like, oh, hang on a minute. I can do karaoke because I can read the
words.
You
can do that. Yeah.
So that was my way of fixing it. I'll never sing now and that's fine. But it's because of my memory and stuff. But at the same time, I was like, oh my gosh, if you take that away from me, I'll be like, I don't know what I'd do with myself. Like it's our life. It's
what would I do?
Yeah, yeah. What would you do? It's just been such a big part of your life. And
absolutely.
Yeah.
And that was what I was terrified with.
I bet you were.
The fact that I'm able to do it and I'm able to, I feel so, so lucky. Yeah. I've met so many people over the years that haven't had the outcome that I've had. And I'm very aware that of how lucky and fortunate that I am, because the people I've met are people that have either had maybe a similar diagnosis, but a really horrific recovery where they still have parts of them that are not the same, things that have been changed forevermore that will never come back. And then on the other side, on the flip side, I've met people that have had the worst diagnosis, people that have been diagnosed with glioblastomas that have been given a finite amount of time that they're going to be on this earth.
Yeah.
So I listen to their stories and I think, oh my God, like how amazing is it that I was able to have this really traumatic time, but I'm out of it. I'm out the other side. And please God, I stay out that side and I don't have a recurrence. And the fact that I'm still able to have my speech, I'm so, so aware of how fortunate I am, because this could have gone a completely other way. I often lie in bed at night and think about if I hadn't have gone to the doctor, if I had have just maybe, I remember my consultant saying to me at one stage, I asked him, if I hadn't gone to the doctor, what would this have started to be symptomatic? And he said, absolutely, you would have either had a seizure or you might have started to lose some power down one side of your body. Something would have shown up because my tumor was growing. And I just know, I'm just so thankful that something made me go to the doctor and get it checked out.
Yeah.
And that's the message I would give to anybody that thinks they have a little niggle or they think there's something wrong, but oh, I'm just going to put it off and I'll go to the doctor next week. I just urge people, don't do that. Because if I had done that, I know for certain it would have been a completely different outcome.
Yeah, so it's about getting there and get there early before it gets worse and to not put it off those headaches. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
So tell us more about the Brain Tumor Island. Tell us about that. Tell us how you got involved and what kind of things they're doing.
Sure. So Brain Tumor Ireland are the only charity in Ireland that rely completely solely on fundraising and people donating to the charity. They're run by like a very small team of people. And when I was initially diagnosed, I started to research and started to look into, like, who can I talk to that can give me some advice? And they were the first charity that came up and I reached out to them. And a lot of the things that they do is about providing support groups, networking, information. But a lot of their website is like information about the different types of tumors, the different types of treatments. That's like where you can start first. They put me in touch with people that had been affected, that had gone through surgery. They have, at the time, it was an online community where you could join and you could just speak to people that had something similar to happen to them. They have now in-person events. They do a lot of charity fundraising. One of the things that they do, which is happening on, is their annual Wear a Hat Day, where they ask people, members of the public, anybody can do it, where you put on your favourite hat, take a selfie, post it onto the social media, any of your social media networks, and they ask just to tag the charity, and you can text a particular number and you can donate €4. It's only €4, and that can help to run these online support groups. It can help for, they have another music class that they offer to patients and their families, which is a musical therapy class where people can join online and from anywhere in the country, and they can just join in to this particular session on music. And it's used really widely around people that have gone through a surgery or that are going through a diagnosis right now. All of this costs money. I just wanted to be able to help them in any way I could. And last year in November, they run a 1 week event where, or sorry, 1 week series of events where it's all about brain tumor awareness. And my consultant in Ireland is actually the spokesperson for the charity as well. So the two of us did a national campaign around Ireland, speaking to radio, speaking to press, going on our national television programme. It's called Ireland AM. And we talked about the awareness campaign and how people can find out what supports are available. So the way I look at it is they were a support to me when I needed somebody to listen, somebody that wasn't close to me, somebody that wasn't part of my family, somebody that had gone through it. And I just want to be able to give back to them and help them. So I've been involved in some of the work that they're doing and playing the face of the campaign for anybody out there that might be going through something similar to me.
Do you feel that there is a charity song coming along?
Maybe. There might be. I might have to. Might have to do something like that. And we have been talking about it. So we definitely need to do something around that can maybe help raise funds for them. So absolutely.
Now everyone now knows here that you're a singer and we all love a good charity
event.
You've got no excuse.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you keep telling it, your voice.
I'll have to do that.
You can't say, oh, it's my speech. You've got no excuse.
No excuse whatsoever. No, I think I definitely need to. That'll be my next project.
Yeah. It sounds like your story is, it sounds like it wouldn't have been easy. It must have been terrifying when this happened. But this is is a nice story for people to hear, because people don't always get to hear good stories that have
that's
a good
outcome. That's another thing for me. I'm an example of having a traumatic experience, having a really tough time, but coming out the other side of it and being really fortunate and like getting diagnosed early and going to the doctor and going through all of these experiences and emotions. But now I'm on the other side and I'm back doing all the things that I love. I'm here for my daughter. I'm here for my husband. And I'm also taking every opportunity that I possibly can, and I'm trying to build something and I'm trying to get my music out there. And one of the singles that I wrote, the second single, it's called Just Like You, and it's all about my diagnosis. And I remember writing some of the lyrics when I was sitting in my consultant's waiting room, and one of the lyrics is, when I get up off this floor, I'm gonna run, I'm gonna soar. And that was me being at the lowest of the lowest. I'm feeling like I'm never going to be me again. And I wrote that song and I said, no, I'm going to release this, and this is going to be an upbeat number, and it's going to be a song that people can hear and go, oh my God, you can come out the other end side of this. You can come out the other end. Mm. So that was really important to me.
Yeah. Is there anyone that you want to say thank you to?
Thank you to Stephen McInerney, my surgeon, for taking this out of my head. Thank you to for all of the nurses and the staff in Beaumont, because they were incredible. Thank you to my counsellor and to my producer now that I'm working with on music, because all of these people are the people that brought me back together. And goes without saying, thanking my husband, Mick, my daughter, Alex, my mom, Rosanna, and then all of my friends and my extended family, because none of this, I wouldn't be here without them. Mm-hmm. And without them backing me and lifting me back up off the floor physically when I was literally in the depths of, I can't cope, I can't do this, how am I going to be back to normal again? Mm-hmm. But I am, thankfully, I am, and it's all because of those people.
Yeah. Thank you that you've come and be a part of Brain Tumor Awareness Month.
Thank you. Keep doing what you're doing. You're amazing too.
Thank you.
Honestly, I read your book, Claire.
Did you?
I read the book and I read your book when I was recovering. Honestly, I bought it. It was the first book that I bought.
Thank you.
Take care, Claire.
You too. Brain Tumors Talk Show.
Thank you.
It's a show full of informative chat and inspirational messages. The Auntie M Brain Tumors Talk Show on podcast.